two First Coast congregations, one black, one white, join forces. That story's just ahead. And good morning, live from Studio 5. This is First Coast Connect on 89.9. Thanks for tuning in. On this chilly morning, I'm Melissa Ross. And don't miss it, because just ahead, we speak with the two local pastors who have partnered up in what's being called a striking example of faith and racial reconciliation here on the First Coast. You can get on the line now with your thoughts at 549-2937. Then later, don't miss it as we speak with character education guru Hal Urban, a preview of his talk tonight in St. John's County, plus The Spectator later on in the hour with a look at all this weekend's events. All of that ahead. But first this morning, an inspiring story from Jacksonville's diverse faith community. Now, the old saying, of course, is that nowhere is America more segregated than on Sunday morning, when people tend to congregate in the church or worship center of their choice. But on January 4th of this year, Shiloh Metropolitan Baptist Church in Jacksonville, a predominantly black church, merged with Ridgewood Baptist Church in Orange Park. Ridgewood's congregation is mostly white. Now, the latter had struggled financially, and Shiloh Pastor H.B. Charles Jr., along with Ridgewood Pastor Michael Clifford, decided that a union would be the best course of action. It's hoped that this striking merger and partnership can serve as a beacon of racial reconciliation, and the announcement has generated headlines far beyond Jacksonville. So this morning, we're delighted to give an in-depth look to this arrangement as we welcome both pastors to Studio 5, Pastor H.B. Charles Jr. in studio. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
And Pastor Michael Clifford, good morning to you.
Good morning.
And here's our question to callers right now. We want to know, what are your thoughts about the merger of Shiloh Metropolitan Baptist Church and Ridgewood Baptist Church and the example it's setting for the First Coast? Give us a call, 549-2937. That's 549-2937. Or go online to wjctnews.org/firstcoastconnect. You can email and tweet the show, and we also welcome your comments on our Facebook page. Pastor Charles, let's begin with you. It's my understanding that you and Pastor Clifford only met a few months ago. Is that right?
Yeah, we were praying about planting a church in our city, and we were trying to find a new location to start that in the Orange Park area. And the Jacksonville Baptist Association set up a meeting with the leaders of Ridgewood and the leaders of our church. And it's when I had the opportunity to meet Pastor Michael Clifford. That's somewhere around May of 2014.
And then, Pastor Clifford, what happened next?
At that time, we met together along with the leader of the Jacksonville Baptist Association, and we just started talking, and that was really the format. Let's just talk. Let's get to know each other. Let's see if this is something the Lord wants us to do. And so we met, we talked, and we decided to let's continue this conversation and dialogue.
And obviously, it was a fruitful dialogue. How did it go from just talking and getting acquainted to the decision to actually merge the two congregations into one?
For us, initially, it was just a conversation about acquiring the facilities to plant a new church there. And the conversations just kind of ran ahead of us quickly, and all of us got excited about the possibility of joining our work together. And as we discussed those things, it seemed as if there was an openness on Pastor Michael Clifford's part. And those conversations just kind of moved ahead of us, and we seem to have been following them.
And give us a call right now with your thoughts and reactions as we speak with Pastor H.B. Charles Jr. and Pastor Michael Clifford. It's the merger of Shiloh Metropolitan Baptist Church in Jacksonville, a predominantly African-American congregation, with the Ridgewood Baptist Church in Orange Park, a predominantly a white congregation. And we want your calls at 549-2937. So if you can, tell us about the conversation, you know, what was said when you guys looked into to each other's eyes and said, let's put our two flocks together.
Yes, we had talked with our leadership for some time, and we said two things. One, we wanted to make sure that we were unified. And number two, we said, God, whatever it is, make it so clear we can't miss it. And the church that continued, and really the only church that continued to come to the forefront, was Shiloh. And so for us, that was easy. And so Sunday after Sunday, I continued to share with the people, this is a conversation we're having. And then at some time, Pastor Charles came and spoke with our leaders, spoke with our people, and the relationship just continued to grow to the point where we started having services together and started helping each other on each other's campus and allowing the congregations not only to get to know each other, but to serve together.
And I guess beginning just last Sunday, you had your first official service as a unified group. Is that right?
We had the first service of what we're calling Shiloh Church of Orange Park this past Sunday at 9:15. And it was a great experience. More than 700 persons attended the first service. There was just a great atmosphere of joy and hope and unity. It was an encouragement to see.
And I'm sure it was a joyful occasion. What have your thoughts been as you've noticed the incredible interest in this published reports, not just here in Jacksonville, but beyond?
That's very encouraging. Anytime that the church can be highlighted for what it truly is, that breaks so many barriers, and that's exactly what Jesus does. He breaks down barriers, and with God, there are no ethnic barriers, there are no racial barriers, there's really no barriers. And to be able to present that to the community in a unified fashion, extremely, extremely excited about that.
Yeah. It brought to mind, as I mentioned a moment ago, the old saying that Sunday morning is the most segregated hour in America. That's sort of the old saying about churches. You're showing that that's not always the case.
Absolutely. I would say it's been an encouragement and a surprise to hear the attention that it's been given. Most of our conversations have just been about the implications of one 100-plus-year-old church and another 100-plus-year-old church just breaking out of what it's comfortable with and learning how to work together. And the racial matters for us has not been a forefront of the conversation. We've really just tried to focus on the gospel and what would make Jesus look good and what would be a help to the community.
And we'll go to your calls in just a moment at 549-2937 as we discuss the merger of Shiloh Metropolitan Baptist Church with Ridgewood Baptist Church. Now the new name of the congregation is,
Shiloh of Orange Park.
Shiloh of Orange Park. We'll go to your calls in a moment at 549-2937. And so what are some of the logistical challenges you've had to deal with as you bring all this together?
Obviously, when you have the merger like that, there are the financial issues you have to go over, the legal issues you have to go over, and just the transfer of different material and things of that nature and getting everything on cue. But that has really gone very smooth. In fact, talking about the racial barriers, what we found is what we knew. The racial issue really hasn't been that big because we're churches. And so we're all bound together, and so we have a common spirit and a common Lord and a common goal. So we have so much more in common than we really had different. That was never really on the mm-hmm. forefront at any time.
Mm-hmm. And it's been striking to see just sort of the outpouring of goodwill and joy that your announcement has generated.
With all of the larger things going on in the past months, in the larger society about racial tension.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. It's just pointed attention to us that we could never do trying to promote or market what we were doing. We were off doing this in a corner, and I just think people were looking for some good news, some hope, some encouragement that people can work together. And our story has just been an encouragement to many people, and we're glad about it.
And if you're just joining the program right now, we're speaking with Pastor H.B. Charles Jr. and Pastor Michael Clifford. Pastor Charles had led a predominantly Black Baptist congregation in the city. Pastor Clifford, a predominantly white congregation in Orange Park. They've joined forces to now form one unified biracial congregation. And we want to know what your thoughts are as we go to the phones right now. Give us a call, 549-2937. Doran on the west side. Hi, Doran. Good morning. You're on the air.
Hey there, Melissa. How are you?
I'm great. Thanks for calling.
Great. Listen, I think this is phenomenal. I had to call. This is tremendous. Both pastors for their foresight and openness. I think it sends a strong message, not just to the city of Jacksonville, but the nation. There are a couple of things that I think are special about this. These two pastors are humbly downplaying the racial element of it. But the reality is, in America, this is a racially divided country, and our faith traditions demonstrate it. One fact is that if there is a biracial congregation, it's usually under a white pastor. And so for Pastor Clifford to be willing to be humble enough to say, all right, I'm going to be, I'll serve in the ministry under another pastor, regardless of his race, I find that pastors are typically very competitive. And for Pastor Clifford to be willing to work with another pastor and be under his leadership, I think that's tremendous. And then when you add the racial aspect of it on top of that, it makes this really special because it's highly unusual for a predominantly white congregation to be under a black pastor. So I just wanted to say that. I just think this is phenomenal. I love that they don't make a big deal about the race issue. It should not be a race issue, but the reality is that it is. Thank you, Melissa, and thank you, both pastors.
All right, that's Doran on the west side. Thanks for that. Pastor Clifford.
Yeah, well, he's correct. Pastors are human beings. We have egos like anyone else. If not more so, we have issues just like everyone else. But as I said, for me, it really was simple. We broke it down as leadership, and I, being the leader of leaders, broke it down like this. God, make it clear. So to me, it really didn't matter who the individual was. In fact, my goal in all of this was hand it off and then go find another church. Typically, I pastor churches that are struggling, and that's just my calling. So the first time that we really sat down and talked, he wanted to see, okay, what's your future plans? And I said, hey, as soon as this is going, I'm going to somewhere else. And then kind of had to redirect because the plans were, no, we want you on board. And so a couple people just came into my life and said, have you really prayed about that? And I had to admit, no, I'm just doing what I usually do. And once I prayed about it, I just felt led that this is where God wanted me to be. And I have no problem serving as an associate under Pastor Charles because he's a man who believes the Lord and follows the word of God. So I had no problem submitting.
And let me ask you, Pastor Charles, your congregation now has to do some your old congregation has to do some driving to the new location in Orange Park. Is that right?
Yes. Well, we're actually functioning out of both.
Out of both?
Both locations here in downtown Jacksonville and in Orange Park, which is about a 25 or so minute drive from each other. And really what we've been focused on in Orange Park is just reaching the community that was neither a member of Ridgewood or Shiloh. And we feel like we had many first-time guests.
You're bringing in new faces.
Yes, ma'am.
That's exciting.
Yes, ma'am. And I said in our Bible study last night to our downtown congregation that you have a new baby sibling, and you have to care for the new baby sibling. And I think there's just a level of excitement about the birth of this new church where downtown members are excited to help.
549-2937. Asher in Ponte Vedra is with us. Asher, thanks for your call. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you very much. For a change, it was a great start of a morning with the wonderful news. My congratulations to Pastor Clifford and Pastor Charles. Pastor Clifford, I really appreciated your very candid response. Clergy to our human subject to all the temptations and ego stuff that limit growth and breaking down of barriers. So congratulations to both of you that you have achieved something that's very refreshing to a Christian. In the current environment, my question specifically, sir, in the current environment where there's so much dichotomy, so much differences, whether it be black, white, Hispanic, green, yellow, different religion, different ethnicities within the different denominations within the Christian faith, your success, how can it be cultivated, exported out to other smaller communities where churches are being sold off, youngsters are being disillusioned because of churches that are not necessarily exciting and functioning or thriving? How can such mergers or such love be exported to those communities so we can regroup and where we are few, we can gather to become more, and such churches can merge together to become more stronger?
Yeah, Asher, thanks for those thoughts, and that's a great question. This is an example of how people of faith can partner to stay vibrant and strong in an era when there have been challenges to faith communities.
Oh, absolutely. We are part of the Southern Baptist Convention, and three Southern Baptist churches every day close their doors, which is one of the things shared with our congregation. That was something that we absolutely did not want to do. That's why we were looking to merge and partner with another congregation. So the shutting of the doors were really not an option. And I believe, but to do this, you have to humble yourself. You have to, because churches sometimes we get so focused on just our local congregation, we don't realize we're a part of the Big C, Big Church, and there are churches that will help. And so that's what we did. We reached out humbly looking for a church that would be willing to partner and to help us.
Mm-hmm. And as he said as well, it's on so many mornings we're covering a negative story. It's nice for a change to have a really positive, joyful segment to lead off the morning.
Indeed. I think if I can add to what Michael was saying, it also takes leadership, courageous leadership, Michael's steps of faith to lead the church to do whatever the Lord would lead them to do to keep the work going was an important step. And just the flexibility of both congregations to get out of their comfort zone to make the Christian mission more important than our institutional goals is an important step that's going to have to happen if more churches are going to model this.
And it's 549-2937. Let us know your thoughts. As two Baptist churches on the First Coast, one with a predominantly African-American congregation and one predominantly white, join forces into one new church. 549-2937. Angela on the South Side. Hi, Angela. Go ahead.
Hi. Thanks for having me. I want to say that I agree with the first caller, and as an atheist and someone with no faith, I just had to call and say that I think this is wonderful. It touches me, and I, you know, really am on the outside of this whole thing, and I just think it's absolutely beautiful, and that's all I wanted to say.
Thanks, Angela, for the call. I assume that's the kind of reaction you've been getting from all kinds of people.
Across the board, yes.
Yeah.
This has been the reaction that it's been positive. And as Pastor Charles said, in light of what has been taking place in our nation, I think that people are more receptive to hearing the other side. There are good news. There are good things that are happening. And I think that's why people are even more excited.
And it's 549-2937 to join the show this morning. James on the North Side. Hey, James. Good morning. What are your thoughts?
Hey, how you doing, Melissa?
Great.
I think that I'm a little surprised that people are finding this surprising, because in Christianity, as Christians, you know, God is colorblind. I mean, honestly, you know, there's only one line to get into heaven. There's only one line, and this should have been done a long time. I hope that this just sends a wave across whatever lines we got, that all Christians are the same. We all need to come together. And for these two gentlemen here to do this, and believe me and my family have been searching for a good international church, because if you look at the demographics now, people are changing. You know, you have a lot more mixed marriages and a lot more different racial people coming into the city and the world, and things are changing. We should have churches like this. This is a really good thing, and I just heard this. And I'm really going to, you know, talk to my wife and see, can we actually come down there to the church, and maybe we might become a member. Thank you.
All right. That's James on the North Side. Thanks for the call, James. So your doors are open, right? You want everyone listening to come visit you.
We absolutely do. 939 Blandin Boulevard on the corner of College and Blandin. We'd love to have you on Sunday mornings. And I also just think we live in a culture where we live in communities that are diverse. We go to schools that are diverse, and life presents us the inevitable reality of dealing with people who are different than us. Mm-hmm. And of all the places where that ought to be true, that ought to be the church, where the hope of Jesus Christ draws people from every nation, language, tongue, and tribe. And it doesn't happen many, many instances. We just are so divided in so many instances. And so I'm just grateful that people are finding this story to be a ray of hope.
Yeah. It, as you said, we've become diverse in our workplaces, our schools, all across society. But as we noted earlier in the hour, Sunday morning has typically been one of those bastions that has not been as integrated. So in that sense, your partnership is still rather unusual. Why do you think that is?
I think a big part of it is just historical. If you go back 150 years, for the most part, churches were segregated. You had your predominantly black churches, your predominantly white churches, and it has been slow to catch up, unfortunately, and which was not the case. You know, in the early church, it embraced everyone, and unfortunately, it divided, and that's why I'm encouraged by this, because this really mirrors the early church, where there were no, like I said, racial, economic, or whatever barriers. There were none of them.
And we're getting tweets and emails for both of you gentlemen. Here's an email from a listener that came in earlier this morning. Will you be able to meet the financial obligations for both churches? And would this put a strain on the congregation to maintain both locations?
We've gotten off to a good start leading up to the beginning of this. The church downtown invested financially to lay a foundation for the beginning of this new work. And with a strong launch, we are expecting that we'll be able to do ministry without a major financial strain.
You're getting that level of support.
Oh, absolutely. And as we've heard callers, they say that it took a step of faith and a bit of work on our part to be able to say and reach out to another church and say, we want to merge with you. At the same time, Shiloh had to take, okay, this is a financial responsibility and a step of faith. And yet they were willing to do that and not only do it, but embrace us as a congregation with open arms.
And Aaron tweets the show, it's a shame that we must even still refer to congregations by their ethnicity in this day and age. Mm-hmm. Jesus Christ does not see color. Mm-hmm. And it's 549-2937 as we go to Travis on the south side right now. Hey, Travis, good morning.
Hi, Melissa. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I work at World Relief Jacksonville here in the city, and this is great news. And I just wanted to quickly highlight the Jacksonville Baptist Association and being a part of this and highlight what they're doing. They're really doing a great job bringing in ethnic communities together, such as Burmese churches, Bhutanese churches, and even the Hispanic churches. They've got such a great platform to bring these ethnic pastors together and provide a place for them to plan and grow and just expand their ministry. And I just wanted to really highlight them as being a great part of this. And I know that both of these churches were a part of the JBA. And we just really celebrate this news this morning. This is incredible news. Very encouraging.
Yeah, thank you for that. That's Travis on the south side. Nice to hear that.
Yeah, and one of the things that the Jacksonville Baptist Association recognizes that many in the community recognize is Jacksonville really is a melting pot of so many different groups throughout, not just ethnic groups, but literally all over the world.
Absolutely, and it has become more so every year. And as you said earlier, Pastor Charles, over the last couple of years, whether you want to talk about Ferguson or the killing of Jordan Davis here in Jacksonville, or any number of incidents you care to name that have been pointed to as highlighting a racial divide and a very painful one in this country, this story, I think, has touched so many because, as you said, everyone is so hopeful for some sort of progress.
Absolutely. And wherever you are on those matters, if you just have a sensitive heart, these have been troubling things to see, and the aftermath of them and the effect it has had on the racial climate in our day. And so I think people have just, you turn on the news and every day it's just the repetition of bad news, bad reports, more issues. And to hear this story, we were wondering how we would get the news out about this work. And in the providence of God, the Lord did it for us just in his perfect timing. This has been a story that has struck a chord. And I hope, beyond the race issue, pointing people to the real hope of bringing people together, which is Jesus Christ.
And it is striking a chord with our listeners, because we're getting calls from across the listening area this morning. Let's go now to John and Yuli. Hi, John. Good morning. Thanks for calling.
Good morning, Melissa. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm not Baptist. I happen to be Roman Catholic, but on various occasions for weddings and funerals and things like that. I have been to Baptist services, some with the congregations that were primarily black and some with congregations that were primarily white. And I would like to start off by saying I think that the merger of these two churches is a truly, truly wonderful Christian move, and I absolutely applaud it. One of the questions that I had listening to the story was that in my experience of being in these two types of Baptist congregations, I noticed that the worship style seemed to be substantially different between these two groups, in that the Baptist churches with primarily black congregants seemed to have a much more animated congregation in terms of their joining into the service, and I noticed that things were frequently more subdued in the white churches, and I was wondering if that was the case with the merger of these two churches in terms of worship style, or how they expected that to kind of play out. It just seemed curious to me, and I'll take my answer off the air. Thank you.
All right. Thanks for that question, John. Yeah, that's a great question. You're both smiling and holding back laughter right now as he asked that question, and that's a great point. There are differences in culture, style, and tone in the way folks worship. So how do you guys deal with that? How do you bridge that? How do you blend all that together?
We discussed all these things, and we had three pre-launch services before January the 4th. And we started merging different singers and musicians and music. And the music is predominantly Shiloh. And I said that it has to be Shiloh. As you come on board, if this is going to work, it's got to have the Shiloh flavor to it. For some, it's an adjustment. For others like myself, because as a preacher, you go to so many different churches, it's not an issue. But the elements are the same. We sing, for the most part, the same music. It may have a different, more of an upbeat to it, but it's the same music. It's the same Bible. The sermon is biblical. The call is one to faith in Jesus. And so those elements bring them together. And it's just one where you have to adjust. If it could be one where it would be more of a high church setting like you would find in a Catholic church, you would have to adjust to that.
Mm-hmm.
And so you have to be flexible. But we have had to be flexible through this whole entire process.
Oh, I'm sure. Any other examples of that?
Sure.
Yeah.
I'd make a bold suggestion here that I think churches are more divided over issues of style than race across America. Issues like music and programs are big issues in a lot of churches. So we were more concerned about those factors than the race issues.
Right.
Churches can split over music stuff more quickly than racial stuff.
Huh.
But in our conversations, we began to see that we share the same faith. Our worship leaders started looking at the material and seeing that we sing many of the same songs. Both of us endeavor to be stubbornly biblical preachers. And I may be a lot louder than Michael, but we're preaching the same message. And I think our congregations are adjusting to those differences for the sake of the things that we share together.
Andrea in Crescent City, Florida. Hi, Andrea. Thanks for holding you on the air.
Yes, thank you for taking my call. This is what I love about your show. I was sitting here having breakfast. Next thing you know, I'm in tears. It's just awesome. And
I'm glad you're enjoying it. Thank you.
Yes, thank you. Even though I live in Crescent City, I'm going to try to get some friends, and we're going to come down there. It just shows me, it's another incident for me personally that shows me how God prevails. It's wonderful.
Andrea, thanks so much for the call. I so appreciate everyone calling in from very far-flung pockets all over the listening area. So as we mentioned a moment ago, gentlemen, you had your first unified service on January 4th. And as you go forward through the year, how do you envision this all continuing to grow?
Well, certainly we have done a lot of planning, and we continue to seek ways where we can reach out. But I think as far as our merger together in Orange Park, we are really looking to reach the community. We went out door to door, door hangers. We have our youth pastor who is having relationships already formed with the local high school, which we already had as our congregation. And we're looking to do more things within the community. When it gets close to Easter time, we're going to have an Easter egg hunt in one of the communities. So we're really looking to reach out to the community, because that was the whole thing. Shiloh was looking to establish a relationship in Orange Park, which we already had a relationship. And that's really the goal, is to continue to reach the community.
Pastor Charles.
Absolutely. What I've been saying is our concern is not for primarily the members of Ridgewood and the members of Shiloh, but for the persons that are members of no church, who need to find a church home, who need to hear the good news of Jesus Christ, who need to experience the light and salt that the church can be. So I agree with Michael. Our goal is to target the Orange Park community and to be a good neighbor and to be a Christian witness there. And we are expecting the Lord to do great things as a result.
And let's give the information out one more time, the name and location of this new church.
The church name is Shiloh Church of Orange Park, 939 Blandin Boulevard, on the corner of College and Blandin. We meet on Sunday mornings at 9:15 and on Tuesday nights at 7 p.m.
All right. Well, I hope this segment brings some new faces into your door. And thank you both so much for being with us. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you, Melissa.
Thank you, Melissa. It's been a joy.
We were joined by Pastor H.B. Charles Jr. and Pastor Michael Clifford this morning. Later in the hour, The Spectator checks in with a look at ideas for your weekend. But up next, author and lecturer Hal Urban, the guru of character education. That's in a moment here on First Coast Connect.
Spend some time in The Square, an online venue for local artists. WJCT and the Cultural Council of Greater Jacksonville invite you to vote for your favorite submissions. Vote now through the end of the month. To learn more about The Square and to place your vote, visit wjct.org/thesquare.
Millions of people find unpaid doctor's bills on their credit reports and go, what?
They thought their insurance company paid for it. They didn't know there was a balance due. Sometimes their insurance company did pay for it, but they paid for it late and it had already gone to collection.
I'm Kai Rizdahl, medical debt that lives forever. Next time on Marketplace, it's from APM. Weeknights at 6 on 89.9 WJCT.
We will not wait any longer. Give us the vote.
That's David Oyelowo as Martin Luther King in the new film Selma, that dramatizes the three voting rights marches in Alabama that led to the passage of the Voting Rights Act in 1965. On the next Fresh Air, we talk with the film's director, Ava DuVernay. Join us. Weekdays at noon on 89.9 WJCT, community-supported public radio.
How a picture can be worth many bullets to some jihadists. The risks faced by some satirical cartoonists who dare to take on religion. The New Yorker's Bob Mankoff reacts to the tragic attacks in Paris this week that stopped the pens of some writers and cartoonists forever. Next time on The Takeaway from PRI, Public Radio International. Weekdays at 2 on 89.9 WJCT.
Welcome back. Well, he's an internationally renowned teacher, author, lecturer, and guru on character education. Dr. Hal Urban speaks tonight at the St. John's Country Day School, and he'll focus on some very old ideas that still have currency in our modern world. I spoke with Urban about the importance of good character in teaching and in life. Hal Urban, welcome to the program. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
So lots of excitement as you prepare to speak to the St. John's Country Day School on the topic of good character, I understand. Can you give us a short preview about what you'll be speaking about?
Well, tonight I'm speaking about the power of words. It's a good indication of character, what comes out of your mouth. I think a lot of people underestimate the power of that. But the reason I chose that is because earlier today I spoke to a large, three audiences, a large section of the student body, and I talked about, in that case, the choices that determine the quality of life, and all of those choices have to do with good character. So I'm asking the kids to discuss that with their parents. And I talk to the teachers about good teaching, about promoting good character. And so with the parents, I'm going to do the power of words with them.
Interesting. And these are values that have been around for a long time. Respect, honesty, hard work, service to others. It seems like common sense. But I guess many might feel that we've gotten away from those values, not just in our school system, but culturally. Do you speak about that?
Yes, I do. And you mentioned common sense. You know, common sense is not as common as it used to be. And there's an old saying that was by an educator whose name I can't remember right now, but she said sometimes it's more important to be reminded than it is to be informed. And I think we need a lot of reminders. I think it's one of the reasons that I read books that I love, I go back and review them and read them over and over again. I agree with you 100%. It is common sense, but the reminders are important, I think.
And particularly when it comes to education, there's so much debate and divisiveness over the best way to educate children. And when you weigh in, I'm sure you get an earful from people everywhere you go. What are your thoughts when you see the divisiveness in this country over a lot of issues, whether it's Common Core, vouchers for private schools? There are so many issues that people have very strongly held opinions about. Do you shy away from those more political topics, or do you discuss them?
Well, it's interesting because I'm writing a book right now, and the title of the book is called Education at Its Best, and the subtitle is A Veteran Teacher. A veteran teacher explains what's good, what's bad, and about our schools and how we can make them better. And so I'm very much aware. I was in the classroom for 35 years. I'm now out, but I follow education very closely because I'm traveling and speaking to teachers and kids and parents. And it's kind of hard to avoid those issues because so many people are talking about. I think from an educator point of view, our biggest resentment is that we have so many experts who have never been in a classroom, but they're telling us what we should be doing. And I think a lot of them are pretty far off the mark.
Like what?
Well, like the national standardized testing has done a significantly more harm to the educational system than it has done help, because they're basically saying one test fits all. But if you've been in the classroom for a long time, you know that one test does not fit all, and there's all kinds of individual ability levels, handicaps, poverty issues, those kinds of things that affect the way kids learn. They also have varying degrees of intelligences and types of intelligence, types of learning styles. So the one test fits all thing is just not healthy.
Do you think that as more and more groups push back against it, that we'll eventually see a shift away from this focus on standardized testing?
I'm actually very surprised that there hasn't been a national protest by teachers, particularly in the public schools, because I don't think the private schools are victims of this. But I'm really surprised that there hasn't been, but I am aware that there have been some pushbacks and that there have been some changes over the over recent months especially.
Really? And why do you think there hasn't been more of that?
You know, I'm not really sure other than I think the people that have the power, that they've kind of bullied teachers into this, and we have so many young teachers coming into the profession who don't have tenure and they don't feel confident in speaking up and so on. The statistics on how many teachers leave within their first 5 years is really frightening to me, because when I started, we were, almost all of us became lifers and lasted 30 to 35 years.
That's how long you taught?
35.
Wow. Yeah. Do you miss it?
Yes, I do. I just feel like I was in a piece of heaven today, because my last audience today was all the 9th, 10th, 11th, and 12th graders, the high school kids. I did teach in a high school, and I just feel kind of ecstatic when I'm with a bunch of teenagers. And so it was really fun talking to them. And yes, I do miss the day-to-day contact with kids.
When you're around kids, what do they mostly want to talk to you about? What do they ask you?
Well, I usually make a presentation. And so it only if they have time afterwards and so on do they ask things. Like, for instance, I made a presentation today about the seven choices that they make every day that will determine the quality of their life. I think had I been able to follow up with a question and answer, then I'd be able to know better what their main concerns are.
Hmm. Anything else you can leave with us?
Well, I think that character education is just critically important, and that's another thing that the national policymakers and test makers have forgotten all about. You know, we go all the way back to Aristotle that said educating the mind without educating the heart is no education at all. And I think that's probably more true now than it was at that time.
Hal Urban, a pleasure. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
That was Dr. Hal Urban. His talk is set for 7 p.m. tonight at the St. John's Country Day School. And just ahead, the Spectator will heat up this chilly Thursday with a look ahead to all the weekend events. Back in a moment.
Some bipartisan agreement on the partisan divide in Washington.
It is a messed up system by, you know, every measurement that you can think of.
These groups influence their conduct and make it more difficult.
Two former congressmen, a Republican and a Democrat, on repairing the House. Later, on All Things Considered from NPR News. Weekdays at 4 on 89.9 WJCT, community-supported public radio.
Discover the latest and greatest in independent music tonight at 11 on The Indie Endeavor.
On the road or at home, chill out with the Electro Lounge, only on 89.9 Tuesday to Saturday nights.
Welcome back. Well, with a reputation as a versatile, daring, and insightful artist, Venezuelan pianist Gabriela Martinez continues to expand her career. She's an international musician who has appeared as a soloist with such distinguished orchestras as San Francisco, Chicago, Houston, and Fort Worth, just to name a few. And she appears this week with the Jacksonville Symphony Orchestra. I spoke with her about the show.
I will be performing with the symphony and Stephen Smith, the Emperor Concerto by Beethoven, which is a really beautiful, regal, majestic piece. It's in three movements. It starts off with these beautiful solo cadenzas for the piano, just, again, very majestic, moving on to a second movement that's just full of joy and full of hope, and a third movement that's very humorous and charming. It's a really fun piece to play with orchestra, because it really showcases the tender side of Beethoven and also the rhythmic, you know, excitement that his music usually has. So I'm really excited to be here performing it this week.
And that's Gabriela Martinez tonight, Friday, and Saturday at the Symphony. Get your tickets at jacksymphony.org. And finally, this hour, lots to do across the First Coast this very chilly weekend. Here she is every Thursday to take us all around town. We welcome the mistress of mayhem, the maven of mirth, the birthday girl, Jacksonville Magazine's Carrie Speckman here this morning.
I like how we've started the applause.
Well,
it's fun. It feels like a real morning show.
People should just applaud whenever you enter a room. I mean,
real morning show, I didn't mean this is not a real morning show.
Of course.
But, I mean, you know what I'm talking about.
You had a birthday this week, Spectatorlicious.
Yes, 2 days ago.
Yes, happy birthday.
Thank you very much.
I hope it was celebrated in fine style.
It was. I slept till 3 yesterday.
Exactly. That's what everyone should do on their birthday.
Which I probably wouldn't have 20 years ago, but you know how that goes.
You know, we're getting older. You know, we got to get our sleep.
We are. We really are.
But not too old to get out and have some fun this weekend.
What a nice segue.
I lie awake at night just thinking of the right little segues to say.
I love a segue.
To make you look your very best.
Oh, I appreciate it. I need it today. It's a little
okay.
rough.
So what's happening tonight?
What's happening tonight is the 70s Soul Jam featuring the Spinners, Stylistics, Cuba Gooding Sr.
Oh, from The Main Ingredient. Yeah.
What is that here?
Yeah.
In the background?
There we go.
Is that the Spinners? Yeah.
Yeah, there we go. Very nice.
Hosted by the Dynamite, Jimmy J.J. Walker.
Oh, he's hosting. That's excellent.
He is hosting, so he'll be doing some of his comic stylings. That is at the Florida Theater tonight at 8 p.m.
The 70s Soul Jam.
Yeah.
Excellent. That
I feel like I should be doing dance moves and like doing spins right now and like
soul,
we should be
Soul Train moves.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, no, the Spinners. You know, they would all stand there and do their little moves.
Oh, yeah.
We should be doing that.
That's going to be a great show. Now, we talked about the symphony just
a moment ago with
Gabriela Martinez. She's coming to town. One of your favorites coming to the Comedy Zone this weekend, Michael Winslow.
Is he coming in to do an interview?
Unfortunately not.
Oh, that's too bad. In honor of him, you know how he does all his voices and like sounds, I would like to do one of my...
Oh, one of your Michael Winslow impressions?
Well, it's not an impression of him. It's just one of my own sound effects that I can do.
All right, here she is now, the Spectator.
It's a chicken. Ready?
Okay.
I do a chimp, too, but I'll spare you from
that. Oh, come on.
It's too loud. I'll break your eardrums. I'll save it for another time.
It's Winslow at the Comedy Zone of Police Academy fame. That's tonight and Saturday.
Yes.
What else is on your
tonight,
list?
Tonight, another interesting thing. It's called Do I Have a Hit Song? It's an international show, apparently. And people from all over the world will be playing their songs, and it's hosted by Drew Copeland of Sister Hazel.
Oh, nice.
And Tommy Two Tone. And then Tommy Two Tone will be playing
their famous hit, 867-5309.
Yes. And do you remember back in the day, like calling that number and hee hee?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I might have actually taken part in those types of activities.
Yeah. Yeah. Me too.
That was my era.
Yeah. And so Tommy Two Tone will be performing at 9:30 and the filming, because they're actually filming it for her show live, 7:30.
Very nice.
Mavericks of the Landing.
Okay, at the Landing. And then also Friday at the Arena, some of the biggest names in Christian music coming
including Skillet, Jeremy Camp, Francesca Battistelli. Wasn't that nice? 7 p.m. at the
You pronounced that perfectly.
Thank you.
Okay, Players by the Sea always does provocative, edgy works.
And they are doing stuff all the time.
They do a wonderful job. What's their newest production?
Oh my God, I totally forgot to write down the name.
Is it The Three Trials of Oscar Wilde, perhaps?
Yes.
Okay.
Oh, yeah, I Three Trials of... Yeah, exactly.
Is that what it's called?
Yes, exactly. He filed a
libel suit?
Yes, against his youthful lover's father for publicly maligning him as a sodomite.
And so this is a play that actually tells the history of Oscar Wilde being put on trial.
Yes, and it interweaves court courtroom testimony and excerpts of his writing.
Okay, so that's Friday, playersbythesea.org. That debuts Friday, I should say.
Exactly.
Also Friday, art and culture all over the place.
I know.
The First Coast Opera has a show Friday.
Yes, they do, at Flagler College in St. Augustine. They're doing Don Juan, First Coast Opera, 7:30.
You okay, Speckman?
Yeah. You look a little... Well, no, I think this pink paper is making
you,
my...
Yeah, your list is on this bright fuchsia pink paper.
Well, I decided
it's
I'm
almost
match
quite
it.
Blinding.
I'm going to match it with my hair.
It matches your hair perfectly.
I ran out of white paper, that's why.
Okay.
And then we have the State Ballet of Russia doing Swan Lake. So it's like high culture.
Yes, and then last but not least, a big event Saturday in Heming Park with the marriage equality coming to the state. There's going to be a mass celebration downtown, and I do believe I've heard a rumor that you may be part of this.
That is correct. The Reverend Spectator will be there in full regalia.
What will you be wearing?
I'll be wearing my traditional white robe.
Okay.
And my stole that features many colors and
your coat of many colors.
Peace signs and hearts.
Are you an ordained minister?
I am.
Are you going to be marrying people?
I have married people.
You're going to be marrying people
on
Saturday. Look, First Coast. You got to come out for this.
I mean, there's going to be, I don't know how many
Don't miss this incredible event.
Right. And I don't know how they're going to set it up, like who marries who, but I just picture.
But you will be one of the officiants.
Yes. I just picture people saying, like, I don't want that crazy lady.
No way. People are going to be lining up for you to be their officiant.
It would be a special person.
I think you'll have takers.
I think I'll have some, but I think some will be like, no, not
no
that.
Way, no but, way.
Oh, way.
I have faith in you.
Pardon the pun.
No, yeah, no pun intended. Reverend Spectator, always
yes.
a pleasure.
Oh, thank you.
Stay warm out there.
It is chilly.
Go see Carrie Saturday at the big event in Heming Park.
Starts at 9.
And if you missed a few of these events, she always posts them on her website.
I do.
Spectator.com.
You got it.
All right, and that's our program. Thanks to all of our guests and callers. Our producer is Sean Birch. Our phone volunteer today is Jim Weeks, and the show theme is composed and performed by the Symphony Orchestra's Pyotr Chevchik. I'm Melissa Ross, and you're listening to First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT FM Jacksonville, your community, your world. We'll be right back here again at 9 a.m. tomorrow. Have a great day.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.